Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. So good to be the baby.
All right now is the Renegade.
People's Radio. It's on the GM in your headphones.
Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil P, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more realer.
That's right, that's right. You listen to the Real Sports Guys. We're real guys. Talk real sports. Another day, RSG. We got an incredible show scheduled. Before I do that, I want to really connect with my guys who are my co-host tonight on RSG. And, you know, I call him, you know, he's like Dr. Dre. He's like the dope producer, Phil T., PhD. What's up, Phil?
Now, are you asking me what's up because you want to know, D-Wills, or are you asking because other people want to know? Because I'm only going to answer if you want to know.
I want to know what's up tonight. I want to know how you're feeling, what's going on. It's always good to have you with me during this time, so I want to know what's up with you.
Right, because I'm getting my Georgia Mark Ricks on. You know, I'm only answering questions if you ask it. Now, if other people are saying that, they say it. No. Do other people say it or are you saying it? So if you say it, I'll tell you how I'm doing, okay? Mark Ricks, man. Mark Ricks almost went. He almost went Denny Green on him, D.
Yeah, he's a little frustrated. You know, the SEC championship would do that to you.
That's right.
I've been hoodwinked. I've been run amok. Yeah,
he's
feeling that. Well, it's really good. Hey, I'm man, the game changer. You know, he's one of our multifaceted guys. He's not here with us this week, but we got the guy. He's like a longtime friend. You know, he's been a mentor. He's been on, you know, Inside the Park, just killing him. If you haven't checked those downloads down, you can get Inside the Park on demand with RJ and Mike. But tonight we got Hank the Bank. Hank the Bank Davis, who will bank fade away off the glass. He's multi-talented. What's up, Hank? How you doing?
I'm doing. Are you asking, or somebody else asking? Because I want to know if you asking. Because you forgot to say bamboozle. I'm doing
well,
fine.
Man.
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be back on the air to talk a little sports. Boy, it's been a long time. Baseball season seemed like it finished in July. It's been so long. So. long time, man. So I'm just glad to be able to just kick it with you guys for a couple of hours.
And I'm listening to those shows, man, and it's just off the hook. I mean, in y'all first year, incredible following y'all built up with the downloads and a lot of energy on that, man. But what people don't know is that you can go across the board, that you multifaceted. You got more to your game. You know, baseball is something you love to talk about, but you equally love to talk about all sports. And we'll have a good time with you tonight. You know, we got a great show tonight. It's going to be off the hook. We have the pleasure. You know, it's been a lot of great boxing happening here lately. And we had the pleasure of having a great analyst, another great analyst. We've been fortunate enough to connect with some great folks in terms of boxing. And we're going to have Teron Biggs from Boxing.com here tonight to really look at what happened with the Miguel Cotto and Austin Trout fight, which was an incredible fight on Showtime at the MSG. And that's going to be incredible. We got Pacquiao Marquez Ford coming up, and he's going to be able to just talk a little bit about that. And, you know, if you guys have not seen Adrian, the problem Broner, I mean, this guy is the next phenom. In some ways, he's like Mayweather with some power. And then you got Danny Garcia Zab Judah. I mean, they had a press conference prior to the Cotto and Austin Trout fight. And stuff broke out. Danny Garcia, if you ever see his father, he will talk. Junk, Zazz, you know, this is going to be Philly versus Brooklyn, a great opportunity. So we'll talk a lot of boxing with him tonight. As always, we got that funky editorial we'll hit. We'll talk about, you know, just the tragedy that happened over the weekend, last week, in terms of what happened in terms of the surrounding the Chiefs. And just, you know, a lot of discussions about whether or not the game should have been postponed or played. You know, we'll dig in that because that's what we do with the Funky Editorial. We'll get into a little bit of Week 13 recap, and there are a number of games we want to highlight. We had a big announcement today, you know, for those Big Ten folks, people in Wisconsin, Brett Bielema going to Arkansas. And, you know, we'll touch a little bit on that, and we hope we can get Brett on the show here over the next month or so. You know, he's a friend of ours, G, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about his new job down there in Arkansas. And then we're going to get into the five on the black-hand side, talk about the NBA. There's a lot of interesting things that are evolving over the recent weeks. I'm a big fan of NBA Pass and loving it. And then we're going to get into the dog of the week. So we got a tight show. We got Hank in the building. We got everyone going, and, you know, we are ready to go. Now, as I said before, we want to kick it off with a special guest who writes for Boxing.com. He writes a great article that you can have a chance to look on it. It's kind of a weekly column that he has called A Week That Was. It was at the Miguel Cotto and Austin Trout fight. Let's welcome to RSG for his first time, Teron Biggs. How you doing?
How's it going, brother?
All right, man. Well, we got a lot to talk.
Thanks for having me on, man.
We love it. You know. First of all, we want to make sure that we bring the best on, and you got a lot going on, and you were in the house. I watched the Miguel Cotto fight. And Austin Trout, I scored at 117-112 for Austin Trout, but I thought he might get robbed because you can't beat Miguel in the MSG. You were there. Talk a little bit about the fight. You were there in that atmosphere. What was it like?
Yeah, man. I still hear the sounds of the people screaming "Cotto, Cotto, Cotto" in my ear from the 13,000, you know, plus fans that were in attendance. And just to go to show you how big of a star that Miguel is in the boxing world, that was actually one of the lower attendance figures that he's had for one of his fights at Madison Square Garden. He actually has set the record when he fought Zab Judah a few years ago when they had in excess of 20,000 for Puerto Rican weekend. So, but it was still, you know, it was one of the smaller crowds that he's had at MS Street, but it was still a boisterous, loud 13,000. You know, pretty much all of them were rooting for Cotto. But yeah, I mean, it was a great atmosphere. You weren't the only person that watched it. I just saw earlier today, Showtime indicated that apparently it was the highest rated boxing program that they've had since they started tracking boxing these numbers, which is, I guess, happened like in the mid 2000s. But apparently during the Cotto Austin Trout fight, something like 1.4 million people were tuned in to Showtime. So that just goes to show you how big of a fight it is and how it was and how big of a star Miguel Cotto was. But like you said, man, it was shocking to myself and the rest of the writers at Press Row that Miguel Cotto could actually lose a decision and basically Madison Square Garden, which is basically like little Puerto Rico, due to the strong, you know, the strong fan base and the strong turnout that he gets. But it was a very good fight. You said you had it scored 117-112?
Yes.
I had it 116-112 for Trout. And most of the boxing writers that were ringside had the bout scored in Trout's favor. But the big question at the end of the 12th round was whether or not Trout would be able to get a fair decision, whether or not the three official judges would actually score the bout in his favor. And I know I myself was shocked when not only did all three judges score the bout in his favor, but they scored it pretty lopsided. I mean, I think two of the scores were like 117, 111. Another was 119, 109. So, you know, basically the judges were saying that Cotto barely won a round, you know, I actually thought the scorecards were a little tilted more in Trout's favor than they should have been. I thought it was a closer fight than that. But I definitely thought that Trout clearly won the fight, clearly landed the harder punches, landed more of them, and he set his will in the fight.
We're on with Teron Biggs with Boxing.com. He has a weekly column that you need to follow, Week That Was. You can reach him at Teron Nicholas on Twitter. When we talked about Trout, I mean, he was billed as this kind of slick fighter, I believe southpaw, but he demonstrated some power and he had some composure. I mean, he was what I was impressed at, you know, he had some staying, and you could tell Cotto, you know, if you look at his face, felt those punches. And so when you think about his ability to establish himself, where do you think he goes from here? I think that they're talking about Canelo Alvarez. He beat his brother down in Mexico. So this guy is a road warrior. I mean, what do you see as his upside as a boxer?
Well, I think one of the key things you said there, D, was about composure. And, you know, actually, in my Week That Was column that I did this week, which had, you know, some of my observations from ringside, was I was surprised at how composed he was. Because like you said, especially early on in the fight, Cotto was trying to bully him. He was, you know, trying to walk him down, tried to enforce his will on him. And I was shocked at how well Austin was able to handle it. You know, there were a couple times that Miguel tried to get him in a corner, tried to get him up against the ropes, you know, where he can get an advantage. And Austin really displayed some great footwork and, you know, being able to maneuver himself off of the ropes or out of the corner. So I was very impressed by that. You know, Austin was an unknown before this fight. He held the title prior to the, you know, well, he held the title, you know, he retained his title, but he was a belt holder, but he had only fought on cable once or twice before on network TV. Well, once on Showtime, I believe, and maybe one other time on HBO. I'm not even sure about that. But so, yeah, so no one really, you know, other than hardcore fight fans, no one really knew what to expect from him. But he put on a great show. You're right. There is Miguel Cotto, if he won, he was going to be fighting Mexican superstar Canelo Alvarez. As I tell my friends who don't follow boxing too closely, the Mexican kid with the freckles and the red hair.
That's right.
And Alvarez is probably one of the biggest stars in the sport. He has a huge, huge following in Mexico and here in the States as well. He's undefeated. And there's obviously a huge rivalry. There has been in the history of boxing between Mexican and Puerto Rican fighters. So Miguel Cotto versus Alvarez was going to – many people were expecting that to be, you know, a fight that was going to do close to a million pay-per-view buys and be one of the biggest fights of 2013. Richard Schaefer, the CEO of Golden Boy, actually hinted at the post-fight press conference that there was still a possibility of that fight happening, which is shocking to me because this was Miguel Cotto's second straight loss. You know, he lost obviously earlier this year, you know, in a mega fight with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, he was competitive in that. I thought he was competitive in this fight, but it was still two losses nonetheless. So you would assume that the obvious choice for Canelo now would be Austin Trout, who is undefeated and who's the title holder. Unfortunately for Austin, he certainly increased his name recognition with the big win over Cotto, he's still relatively unknown to a lot of boxing fans. And he also is a very, you know, like you said, he's a southpaw. He has a difficult style. He's a, you know, he's gotten a reputation as a technical, very technical fighter, a very good boxer. And, you know, it really looks like Golden Boy, who's Canelo Alvarez's promoter, it looks like they do not want to let Canelo anywhere near Austin Trout, for now at least, just because they feel like there's no upside in terms of him fighting Trout. So what's next for Trout? That's a good question. I really don't know. There's another title holder at his weight class in a junior middleweight, 154-pound weight class. This guy named Cornelius Bunrich, who's from who's from Detroit.
Yeah,
I know you guys. I know there's a couple of Detroit guys on RSG, so you guys might have some love for him. But he's a Detroit fighter. He used to train with the late Manny Stewart. So it would be really good for Trout if he could fight Bunrich. It would give him opportunity to capture another belt, increase his name recognition, and sort of increase the demand for him to fight Canelo.
We're on with Teron Briggs with Boxing.com, or you can catch him on Examiner.com. You know, the thing about him is he has some personality. I think that was one of the things that we were able to see with him. The person that has the most personality coming up right now is Adrian the Problem Broner. This young man, I saw him a few weeks back. Is a beast. For people who haven't followed boxing, can you talk a little bit about him and why he's probably the next, if he's not already, the next star in boxing?
Yeah, well, his nickname is The Problem, Adrian The Problem Broner. He's out of Cincinnati, Ohio. A lot of people, it's funny, one of my female friends who doesn't necessarily follow the sport of boxing that closely, but, you know, who watches fights from time to time, She asked me about him. She didn't remember his name exactly, but she's like, "Who's that kid with the brush? The kid with the brush from the Midwest."
That's right.
Yeah. and that's, you know, that's one of the ways that he's sort of gotten his name sort of, you know, his name out there, is that he's known for having his dad acting his dad after his after he usually knocks someone out, asking his dad to brush his hair while he's being interviewed by the lately it's been by HBO, because that's who he's been fighting with, by the HBO commentators. So he's sort of got his little gimmick there, the brush thing. But more importantly than that, he's a good fighter, man. I mean, he is a very technically skilled fighter, but he's also a guy with power. You know, a lot of times in boxing, you know, at the end of the day, people love knockouts. And, you know, that's why people like Mike Tyson can still walk around and be recognized and get so much love, is because, you know, Tyson was obviously a huge knockout guy, and Broner has had something like 25 fights and knocked out 21 of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So his style is very fan friendly. Like you said, he's very charismatic. He does great interviews. He's easy to talk to, you know, for reporters. He's easy to talk to for fans. He's a good-looking guy, a pretty good-looking guy, you know, which definitely doesn't hurt in terms of being put on TV. And he seems like he is willing to pretty much fight anyone out there. So
Yeah, it's gonna be. Folks are just gonna have to step up to get beat down with him. You're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with Teron Briggs with boxing.com. You got to follow his weekly column, Week That Was. Right before this, the fight, the Cotto fight, they had the press conference for Danny Garcia and Zab Judah. Both posses, both folks around there bring nothing but drama. You've been around boxing, you know Zab. I remember watching Zab at Thomas and Mack against Floyd Mayweather and what happened in that ring. So Zab brings his own set of energy, not just him, but his father and the group. And then you got Danny Garcia and his father. His father is on a whole other level. Were you at the press conference?
Yes, I actually sort of got last minute, the editor of my site sent me an email, and he's like, oh, man, I just wanted to remind you about the press conference. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, I was, because like you said, it was the day of the, it was on the 1st, December 1st,
yep,
the day of the Cotto fight. So I'm a Brooklyn native. I'm a current Brooklyn resident. So I was already planning on coming into the city to see the fight at MSG. So I'm like, oh, well, you know what, I'll just come in a little early and get a chance to get a little food, because actually the conference was held at Gallagher's, and any writer, you know, whether it be boxing, baseball, or football, will tell you the best way to get writers to come out is to offer them some free food. So
that's right.
Yeah. So it was free food. And then, you know, there was also a little bit of ratchetness, because these guys, you know, there were no fists thrown, which is always what you don't want to see definitely at a press conference. But there was a lot of there was definitely a lot of insults thrown around. And like you said, Danny Garcia, who is right now one of the current champions at the in the junior welterweight division, his father, whose mouth can who pretty much says whatever comes to his mind.
That's right.
Yeah, he basically called out Zab, man. He said some things that rubbed Zab the wrong way. He basically denigrated his to a certain degree, denigrated his career. I mean, it was funny because he would at one moment say, you know, I don't want to disrespect Zab, and then, you know, then he would turn around and say, well, you know, Zab's only a 4-round fighter, and after that, you know, we're gonna knock him out. And I'm like, okay. So that was funny. But yeah, so they. And Zab is actually, you know, Zab has been around the sport for since before the Bible, it seems like.
Yes, right.
But you know, and he's like you said, in that Floyd fight, you know, there was all kinds of craziness going on with his corner and them breaking some rules, and he's had that reputation in his career, but now he's actually he says he's a born again Christian. And In recent years, you really haven't seen a lot of stuff about him partying or just, like, sort of being out there in the mix. You know, he's saying that he refocused himself on his boxing career. But he looked like he was ready to lose his religion at that press conference when he got face-to-face with Danny Garcia's dad, Angel, and they yelled some obscenities at each other.
Well, and the thing about it, he might be born again, but is his dad born again? And, you know, you don't know what can happen with your entourage. Now, you say you're a Brooklyn native. You're a Morehouse man. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that with R.J. Page, our fellow colleague on RSG. As a Morehouse man and Brooklyn native, this fight is going to be, what, at the Barclays Center?
Yeah, that's correct. It's going to be at the Barclays Center on February 9th on Showtime.
Okay. And how does it feel as a Brooklyn native to have boxing really back in the community?
Oh, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is I actually did not get I'm still kicking myself to today. I didn't get an opportunity to cover the first fight at the first card at the Barclays,
yeah,
because I had a prior obligation. So
yeah,
this February 9th card is going to be my first time attending a world championship card in the borough of Brooklyn. But it's great. I mean, Brooklyn in particular has a number of active, really good fighters. So it's great for them to get an opportunity to showcase their skills in their home borough in front of their, you know, friends and family. And then obviously just New York in general has a ton of good fighters. So it's great that they get a chance to showcase their skills. And, you know, prior to now, it's always been for the major fights, Madison Square Garden. But, you know, between the Knicks and the Rangers and all the other shows that MSG has a lot of times, you know, some good boxing matches that have been proposed for the Garden haven't been able to go there just because of the scheduling. So this the Barclays provides the alternative to that.
When you know, we got the Pacquiao Marquez four. I can understand the reasoning behind it. You know, I know Pacquiao is still reeling from the Bradley decision. You know, we got Mayweather out there. Talk a little bit about this fight and what you think, but then what does it mean for, you know, Mayweather, Pacquiao, or possible matchups within that circle? How are you seeing this fight first and then where it might go after that?
Well, exactly. So, you know, obviously that fight, Pacquiao, Marquez, 35, I mean, excuse me, Pacquiao Marquez 4. It seems like they've fought about
35. You're right.
30 plus times. But they're fighting this Saturday on HBO pay-per-view, the 4th, and we've been told the final time they're going to fight. I'm looking forward to the fight. You know, there's a lot of, like you said, it's the 4th time they've fought. The third, they fought last year in November. It was a very controversial decision that was awarded to Pacquiao. You know, the hype around the fight, I have to say that I can't really get into it. They're doing HBO's doing a 24/7 series, which can at times be really good, and to be honest with you, can at times be a bit boring. We've seen both of these guys on HBO, I mean on 24/7 a ton of times. I can't buy into it. You know, there's this whole week there's tons of media functions going on and tons of different hype with them appearing on shows. I can't get into that. But what I can get into is the fight, because these guys have fought 3 times, and all 3 times that they've fought, they've been classic wars. They've been great fights. Their styles just match up together. You know, they go together like Tom and Jerry, man. So that's what fight fans have to look forward to. Pretty much a guarantee that it's at least going to be a decent fight, and both guys are saying that they really want to win this fight and really want to knock the other guy out. So the one thing that we haven't gotten in the 3 previous fights, so we have gotten some knockdowns, is a knockout. So, you know, boxing fans can cross their fingers that we can get a knockout and a definitive ending here, so there's no controversy about the decision. And then, to be honest with you, I don't really think this factors in much into – I know you had asked about Pacquiao Mayweather. It doesn't really factor much into that fight because I just – I don't know if – I don't know when or even if that fight will ever happen, which is pretty sad. But it's, you know, as more and more time passes on, and both Pacquiao and Money Mayweather get, you know, each get older and older, it just doesn't look likely that they're gonna meet in the ring.
You know, and that to me that's sad. You know, but we still, I mean, the thing about it is we have some emerging fighters. I mean, you know, we have, you know, Andre Ward is going to be fighting Pavlik. We just talked about, you know, think about Danny Garcia coming up. We talked about Broner. But one of the things we noticed we haven't talked about is heavyweights. You know, Mitchell, I believe the American heavyweight just got crushed. What is going to happen? I mean, boxing needs an American heavyweight. I just feel like it does, but maybe it doesn't. Who's some people that are on the rise that we need to pay attention to?
Well, like you said, Seth Mitchell was the was considered to be probably the top American heavyweight prospect. He was the former linebacker at Michigan State. He had compiled a nice record, you know, knocked out pretty much everyone he got in the ring with, and then he faced the Jonathan Banks, Vladimir Klitschko, the guy considered to be the universal heavyweight champion of the world. He faced his trainer and Jonathan Banks, knocked Seth Mitchell around the ring and knocked him out. So that pretty much it certainly didn't end Seth Mitchell's career, but it ended all of the hype surrounding him being the next great potential American heavyweight. There are two other guys who were sort of on the scene. Dante Wilder, who is he won the gold medal in the 2004 Olympics. He's the last American boxer to win a gold medal. He's being promoted by Golden Boy Promotions, you know, they're either the first or second biggest promotional firm in the sport. Wilder is 25-0. He's knocked out 25 of his opponents. Unfortunately, he hasn't fought anyone pretty much with a pulse at this point. They're bringing him along very slowly. He had a and that's what the problem is with most American heavyweights, is that most of these guys aren't turning to the sport until their late teens, if not their early 20s. So they don't really have a chance to get a really good amateur career, and that's really important in boxing. You know, it's just like football or baseball. You know, you're not going to find too many 20-year-old guys who are going to, you know, all of a sudden take up football and become the next great quarterback. You know, these guys, you know, to be at the top of your sport, you usually have to get started at an early age. So D'Antonio Rollin, he's a possibility. He's 6'7", so he's as big as both of the two Klitschko's, who are considered the two best heavyweights in the world, and he's got a pretty good amateur background, so he's someone to be on the lookout for. And then Brian Jennings, who's a guy who up until recently had a full-time job and was not really on anyone's radar because he didn't even compete in the Olympics. He's undefeated. He's actually fighting on NBC Sports Network this weekend. He, unlike Dante Wilder, actually has a pretty good win over a former heavyweight belt holder, Sergey Lakovich. He got that victory. So he's a guy to sort of watch out for. He's not as big as the Klitschko's. I think he's something like, he's probably about 6'3", 220 pounds, but he's shown some power, and he's a hard worker. So, and that's pretty, unfortunately, right now, that's pretty much the only hopes that Chris Areola, who we saw lose to Vitaly Klitschko a couple years ago in a lopsided fashion, he's still fighting. But outside of that, that's about it for the heavyweight in terms of American heavyweights.
So, hey, we pretty much got to look below the heavyweight Americans for any life. Andre Ward is a interesting person because in his most recent fight, he finally demonstrated devastating power. You know, he'd really been a technician for the most part, but he kind of went to another level in his previous fight. What do you think he is pound for pound on your list?
Well, I enjoy reading other people's pound for pound lists, but I'm not one who really believes in a pound for pound list just because it's so difficult. Because, you know, all these different guys are in different divisions. He's one of the best fighters in boxing. I don't know where he is on a list, but I know that if I ever met him in a dark alley where someplace, I would definitely be looking to run and get away from him because he is a damn good fighter. And one of the things that I love about him is that it's not only that he's very good, but he actually yearns to be great. Like, you know, like you said, he's a guy who had been considered a very technical fighter. He had beaten some very good fighters. He just competed in the Super Six at the super middleweight division, and he came out as the winner of that. But, you know, the thing he's been talking about recently is that he wants to start knocking guys out. He's like, you know, I don't want to just win. He's like, I want to win in a definitive fashion, and I want to do it with knockouts. And, you know, he started that by knocking out Chad Dawson, the guy who was the lightweight champion who moved down in weight, and, you know, in a fight that a lot of people thought were going to be very competitive. He dominated that fight and then knocked out Dawson in something like the eighth or ninth round. So it certainly seems like Andre Ward, for him, the sky's the limit. I mean, he's got Kelly Pavlik coming up on HBO early next year. It's a fight that he's an overwhelming favorite for, even though Kelly Pavlik is the former 160-pound champion. And it's just a matter of, right now for Andre Ward, the most difficult thing for him is probably going to be, and it's the same thing that it was for Roy Jones when he was in his prime, was finding a suitable opponent that can bring out the best in him, and also finding an opponent that he can put together some mega fights with.
Teron, you know, it's definitely been a pleasure having you on. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you, how they can stay in touch, keep up with what you're doing, your writing? Can you share that with our listeners?
Oh, sure. Thanks a lot, D. Like you said, you can. I'm one of the writers for boxing.com. I have a weekly column called Week That Was, which basically sums up all of the boxing action from around the globe, all the notable boxing action from around the globe. That runs every Monday check to the site for that. And, you know, I know a lot of times people don't get a chance to watch the fights. And if you do, sometimes you like someone to sort of shed some light on what they mean. That's what I do in that column. I also contribute a number of other columns to the site as well. So just stay tuned to boxing.com for me. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Teron Nicholas, and that's the first name Teron, T-E-R-O-N, and my middle name Nicholas, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S. And I always tweet whether it be shocking, you know, shocking news or, you know, breaking news, excuse me, and results. And then also I'm a writer for Examiner.com. And if you just Google Examiner.com and Teron Briggs, you can find some of my previous articles and some of the pieces that I'll be doing for them in the future.
Well, hey, we appreciate you. You know, you're now in the RSG family. We'll call on you on future fights. Love to have you in to get your perspective. It's been a pleasure, my man.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, man. I've had an opportunity to go to your site and listen to some of the previous broadcasts. You guys got some good stuff on there, man. So more power to you, and I look forward to coming back on the air and speaking some more boxing news.
All right, man. You take it easy. Take care. That's Teron Briggs, man, with boxing.com. Go check him out. We love it. Let's give him that clap up. Hank, he brought it, a lot. With the boxing world, and, you know, it's funny because everybody talks about the UFC and MMA and everything else, but nothing's like a big-time boxing match.
That's for sure. You know, it's when you think about boxing, you know, and you've got some names out there with Cotto and Trout, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, Devon, we grew up in the old school days of me anyway, with Ali, Frazier. Then coming up with Hearns and Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, that was the heyday of boxing, man. You know, you couldn't wait to get to, you know, to watch and see what was going on. You kind of wish that boxing would come back to that, the sweet science that it is.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, I've just been enjoying it. I've been scoring here probably for the last 2 years. I don't watch a fight. I got an application on my phone. I score, and it's been good to kind of learn how to score and look at it and, you know, I'm trying to bring it back. It's something that we love to talk about. Well, we're about to transition into, you know, one of our staple conversations. You know how we do this.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say.
Yes.
Shall we say it, y'all?
Yes.
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Ryan,
yes.
Sit.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
This week's funky editorial is to really, you know, think about, sports and really thinking about what sports actually mean. Sometimes tragic events happen and, you know, we often, you know, wonder why, we ask questions why we are you know, often, you know, trying to, you know, figure out, make sense. And then, you know, we often are trying to figure out, you know, what is appropriate, what is it when we're thinking about what was going on. And obviously we had the tragedy in Kansas City this past week where, you know, players had to really think about a teammate. Coaches had to get people rallied. Number of families, domestic violence, all of these things were kind of intertwined. And so a lot of people had discussed whether or not a game should have been played. Hank, I know you are a person that watches a lot of football, but, you know, we often were together debating life and thinking about those issues. You know, what did you think about when there was debate about whether to play or not play after the tragedy in Kansas City?
I really don't think it should have been a debate, Devon. I think that they should have not played. You know, it's a shame that Roger Goodell is going to follow the money. I think that them postponing that game for all the right reasons would have really been, you know, a feather in the NFL's cap. You know, at some point, you know, sports has got to step aside for real life. And what's going on right now is when you look at the NFL as the individual players, they're starting to have a real image problem. You're starting to see a lot of just off-the-wall type of behavior with these guys. We see it here in Detroit all the time, in Ndamukong Suh and all the issues he's having. We've had the tragic suicide of Junior Seau earlier this year, and now you got something like this. You know, when you happen once or twice, you can say, oh, maybe it's an aberration. But see, this is a pattern now for the NFL, and at some point they need to start. In my opinion, I thought they missed an opportunity to just stop and take a deep breath and, you know, recognize the families, recognize the tragedy as it was. Hell, the sad thing about it, the real disgusting thing about it was Romeo Crennel and Paoli, the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, actually witnessed this young man, Javon Belcher, taking his life. And yet, less than 24 hours later, they were going to have to go out and, you know, do this thing. It was ridiculous. I just thought that was a bad move on the NFL to play that game.
Phil, you know, I know you, you know, often try to help us. I think Hank is nail some things in the head, try to put things in perspective. What were your thoughts when a lot of this discussion about, you know, what happened with Belcher and, you know, the fact that you had Romeo Crennel and the general manager witnessing this, Scott Pioli, and then, you know, actually suiting up and they're having team play a game on Sunday. What's your perspective on that?
That'd be a nightmare for anybody to witness a coworker, somebody, a member of your work family, go through that, and more details are coming out to see just how troubled this young man was, and efforts that were made to get him help. With that being said, I was okay with the game being played, primarily because the coaches and the team seem to be okay with it. If that was truly the case, if it was really the coaches and the team's decision, without pressure from the league, and perhaps I'm being a little bit naive here, but if it was certainly the team's decision, I was okay with them playing or not playing. I mean, Hank brings up some excellent points, and I do agree with him that it would have been a major statement if the NFL would have said, listen, forget fantasy football playoffs, forget gambling, forget how do we get a game in. It's not like baseball where you can play a doubleheader. And, you know, if they would put all that aside and just taking the week off, I certainly would have respected that as well. The thing that really bothers me is, I mean, this was a horrendous crime. And you got an innocent kid here, a few months old, that is now an orphan. But with that being said, I've really had a hard time with people coming out and having an issue with certain Chief teammates having a hard time losing one of their teammates. And just because this young man really messed up, I mean, he took his life, he took the life of, you know, his girlfriend, that's inexplicable. There's no excuse for that. But when you work with people, We all know and love people that have made bad mistakes. And I don't think it's acceptable to just step away from them when they've made these mistakes. It's one thing to condone behavior, but most people don't. Most people are reasonable enough to say, hey, this young man made a mistake, but he was still my friend. And I've really had a hard time with a lot of people who have come out to be very critical, whether it's Dwayne Bowe or other teammates who have stepped up and say, hey, I'm having a hard time, I'm going to miss this guy. You know, we spent a lot of time together. So those are just my thoughts with it. I mean, I think it's a very emotional topic. It's a very serious real world topic. Like Hank says, I mean, this transcends sports. I mean, this is real world stuff that's going to have real life, real world consequences when we're on the next season. There's going to be family still putting the pieces back together.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think that's you know, important. I think that's a good place to really kind of sum this this up, because I think you're right that there's a ripple effect. It's more complex than, you know, what people say in their statements. A lot of times players like that are saying that because they're also guilty because they should have seen the signs. If they did see the signs, they should have acted on the signs. And so I think that's a lot of that is what's being expressed when folks are talking about this scene. Not only that they missed an opportunity to maybe save a teammate, but also save this young lady's life. And so it becomes a very important issue, and it's, you know, where sports, you know, intersects with the real world, and these are real individuals. And you know, I know Jason Whitlock as well also created a little firestorm talking about, you know, guns being available and the availability of guns and all this stuff. But you know, there's opportunity for folks to really look at some of the causes, and sometimes you could have all the things in place and things happen. You can't explain them. And so, you know, debate will happen on either side of it. You know, our thoughts go out to just all those people who are affected, because there are going to be people affected all around this, and, you know, who are going to need support through this. And, you know, a lot was played. You know, within the cloud of this tragedy we just talked about, there was a lot going on. This week. And one of the questions we like to ask each other is, you know, what do we know now? And so, you know, Phil, maybe I'll start with you. You know, what do we know now after week 13?
We know that the rookie quarterback play has been outstanding, but I want to focus on Russell Wilson. We had his college coach on, Coach Brett Bielema, on a few months ago, a friend of the show, the Wisconsin head football coach. And this is what he had to say, predicting what Wilson would do.
The guy that added, obviously, a lot to our team this year, Russell Wilson, is just a, you know, it's. I know everybody's going to think it's Coach Speak or it's coaching cliche. As good a football player is, he's an even better person, an even better human being. Just great chemistry, brought it to the locker room right away. The kids, you know, electing captain 4 weeks later, he's so dynamic as a leader and as a guy that can really – you know, his two best quarters of football might have been the fourth quarter against Ohio State and Michigan State. I mean, he played and got us into those games, and all they ended up being losses. That was really, in my mind, stands out as some of his best football. So both great kids. I think you're going to hear about Russell next year in the NFL a lot earlier than most people think. And then Imani, when he gets his time a year from now, I think it'll be the exact same.
So that was Coach Bielema on The Real Sports Guys a couple of months ago. Devon actually interviewed him. And at that time, you know, this was right around combine time, and a lot of people were questioning if Russell Wilson would be a professional football player just because of his size. And honestly, I thought last year he should have been a Heisman Trophy candidate. I thought he should have been invited to New York. That's how impressed I was with his play. You know, because the Badgers lost those two games during the regular season, they kind of went off the map a little bit. I mean, Ball's numbers just jumped off the page, so he got invited. But it was something about Wilson, man. When I saw him play, I thought Drew Brees. I thought this guy's a winner. I mean, this is a guy that can make plays. And so, you know, a long-winded way of saying, what do we know now? We know that Russell Wilson has the ability to play in the NFL. And there are some people, whether it's Allen Iverson, it's Muggsy Bogues, it's Drew Brees, or it's Russell Wilson. It's not about size, man. They find a way to make it happen. They've done it their whole life, and Russell Wilson will continue to be a quality starter in the NFL.
Well said, my man. I like to say the dope producer, Dr. Dre. Well, Hank, what do we know in week
four? What do we know? Well, you know, this is going to be a lot of fun. We know now. Unequivocally, and it's been confirmed, that the dream team that was the Philadelphia Eagles is now officially a nightmare. You know now that Andy Reid is fearful. We have not heard not hide nor hair of Vince Young, you know. We know now that Michael Vick is gone, if he can remember.
Wow, winning.
If he can remember that he is Michael Vick or Ron Mexico or whatever he calls himself these days. That's what we do now. So that regardless of the year, whether it's 2012, whether it's doomsday, that the Detroit Lions is still the Detroit Lions.
I tell you what, Hank, I was hanging out with a Detroit Lions fan, and, you know, they were up by 12, 13 points with 5 or 6 minutes left, and my man was just like, you know what, they're going to find a way to lose. No, they won't. They'll win. Trust me. They're going to find a way to lose. And what happened? They found a way to lose.
You got to understand, the Detroit Lions is the one team that will make a Pro Bowler out of anybody on any given season. And I promise you, when I saw that they was up by 13 points, I'm like, that's not enough. I knew they were going to lose. In fact, let me tell you this. On Thanksgiving, I refused. They was winning. I refused to watch that game. I said, you know why? Because some things are always the same. You know, you can count on death and taxes, and the Lions disappointing you on Thanksgiving. And there you have it.
Hank Davis, ladies and gentlemen. Hank Davis.
Hank Davis is in the building. And I'm going to say what we know is they had no clue in New York Jets land. That's what we know. We know that we had no clue in New York Jets land. The other thing we know is the Pittsburgh Steelers chant next man up, or as Coach Tomlin will say, we just concentrate on the healthy ones.
That's right.
We know that that works.
Hey, Mendenhall went from the franchise back to third string.
There ain't no plan in Pittsburgh, baby.
No.
We just concentrate on the healthy ones.
That's what we do.
Oh, I love that. So, San Francisco loses to St. Louis. Kaepernick has a safety because he has a bunch of intentional grounding. He has turnovers. He made some decent plays. St. Louis wins in overtime and field goal, 54-yarder. What is going on in San Francisco, Hank?
Listen, let me go and put this to you real simple.
You know that's our boy right there too, right?
Boy, you know, love me some Jimmy Harbaugh. Go blue all day yesterday. But young man, this is not Stanford, okay? This is the NFL. As Jerry Glanville said, that means not for long as you keep on doing crazy stuff like you're doing. You've got a quarterback now, quarterbacked you to the NFC Championship game last year, all right? Let's not be stupid. I know Kaepernick is nice, but this is not a game. This is not one you're supposed to lose. You're not supposed to lose to the Rams, okay? Not at all. Not at home. Not ever, okay? And they did. He had a great game on Monday night, but we know what Monday night does to players sometimes, okay? It was time to go back. If Alex Smith is healthy, he's got to play. You have this debate, during camp. Not now when you're in the playoff hunt. Sorry, Jimmy, you dropped the ball and kicked it out of bounds on that one.
Phil, what's your reaction to that?
Ditto, and see my remarks from last week's show. Ditto. I feel the same way. Sidebar. I mean, because I don't even want to waste the listeners' time with my remarks, because they're exactly like Hank's. As you all know, Hank is from Inside the Park, our baseball show. Hank, I'm going to give you an opportunity, because folks that who have listened to the baseball show all season, they know how you and RJ and Bailing go back and forth. I'm going to give you a chance to take a shot at them, and they have no opportunity to defend themselves. Have at it.
Oh, okay. Here we go. The first one, I'm going to start out with Mike. You know, Mike, it was wonderful working with you, but, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that unfortunately we have the same problem. with our teams not being able to finish, unfortunately. But we did get to the big show, you know, and if y'all did your job and took care of the Giants, maybe we would have been playing you guys, but you didn't do that. You know, so shame on you, shame on them. RJ, I still owe you a pop, young man, because the Dodgers did not make it to the playoffs. But I'm willing to triple or nothing that going into this year because I think Magic and them are going to buy Major League Baseball to make sure they get that team to the World Series this year. So look me up, young man. I can't wait to see you.
Back to regular programming, D. Wills.
Hey, on that note, we're going to go to
five on the black hand side.
This is our moving to the association edition. NBA basketball. The commish fines the Spurs. Is it just or unjust? Phil T.
Just. It Popovich just gained 500 cool points. I want to play for Popovich. And anybody know me, know I can't get up and down the court more than twice nowadays. But man, that cat, I love Popovich. Popovich Gangster. He is Belichick times 500. I love it.
He like, y'all get on the plane, get to your home.
Well, coach, I mean, what about the league? What about the listen, get on the plane, go home. All right.
Walk in with tickets. First class seats, probably. Just get on the plane and go home. Hey, what did you think about that, man?
You know what? It was justified, but you know what? It was a thumb in Stern's nose, right in his face. So, a Thursday night, you know, game against the Heat. And the thing is, they weren't even in the building. That's what cracks me up. They didn't in the building. You know, you would think that when they sit on the bench or something, those cats was at home in their beds. Do y'all hear me? They wasn't even in the damn building. So it was. I think it was justified because let's say I'm in Miami. I can't wait to go see this game. And there's no Duncan. There's no Tony Parker. You know, where the hell is everybody? You know, I would be upset. I know what Stern is doing. It's the integrity of the game. But as Pop said, look, we done played all these games in a row. The hell with you. We sending our players home.
I tell you what, I bet there will be some scheduling revisions for next season. You won't see these four games in five nights. You won't see it no more, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a slippery slope because, you know, he's got an aging team. He's trying to manage, and, you know, I know they're probably telling him to stagger, you know, when he sends them home and not play and everything else, but what you're going to see is those cats in their uniform sitting right on the bench, never getting off the bench. You might see them with some popcorn, drink. They might have the drink pack. Duncan's going to be over there with chicken bone in his mouth.
Let me ask you this question. Let's say this was a Tuesday night game, okay, and the San Antonio Spurs is playing the Washington Wizards, and he's sending those cats home. Do they get fined?
No.
It's a marquee matchup. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is about TV money. In some ways, Popovich is kind of like, you know, teacher. Sometimes college kids come up with the oddest excuses. I mean, grandmothers and grandfathers die every other semester. You know, the internet went down. Sometimes the kid that just says, you know what, I just missed the deadline. That's the person I just want to say, take an extra week. Take your time. I mean, Popovich could have lied. You know, Popovich could have said, you know, Timmy Duncan has a strained pinky. Or whatever it is. I mean, we all know that's a joke, man. These coaches' decisions, these coaches, you know, put in these false reports on the injury reports. And Popovich just said, you know what, my team is old. If they weren't, you know, if my star guys were younger, maybe I'd do something else, but they're not. And so I think Popovich scored a lot of points for just the honesty piece. You know, Should he have covered it up? Should he have done the status quo? I don't know, but he didn't, and he's coming away smelling like roses.
Mm-hmm. I think we got him in trouble because let's make sure. He sent home his three vets, but then he sent home, like, Danny Green.
Right.
I think the Danny Green one got him. You know. You know, that's the cash that went for 30 that night. But he said, well, that's probably where he looked. He's like, what the hell Danny Green doing on the play?
Now,
you
what would have happened if the Spurs would have won? What would have happened then?
They pushed him that night. They pushed him hard. It might have been a good – I almost thought as well, because we're going to see Miami again, and we don't want to show our hand. I mean, he played all kinds of games. Like, you're not going to scout us. You know, we're not going to show our best stuff against you, you know, because we may see you again. Well, we're going to take it north of Miami, Boston, Brooklyn, Battle, Kardashian's old flame, and Rondo went head-to-head under the basket. Rondo got the suspension. Question is, what's up with the Celtics? Are they soft? What's going on? Hank, what you think? What's going on? What's going on with the Rondo suspension? What's going on with him?
I just think that the Celtics are not played. That's what I think. I think that Ray Allen gone, I think they old. You're not going to get the same Kevin Garnett you had from back in the day. And let's face it, they're trying to piece some things together. I think that, quite frankly, Doc and Daryl and Angels, you know, they are what they are. They're the middle of a road team. I don't think they're a threat. I question the suspension, but yet and still, you know, they are what they are. I think you're gonna see the Celtics just be basically a 500 team all year.
I think I knew it was gonna take them a while to get where they need to go as a team because they got some young parts and stuff like that. You know, I figured, you know, they wouldn't show as much frustration. Doc is good at, let's say, look, let's just be good to, let's be ready to go by March and April and be patient with it. But I think with Brooklyn coming on, some of these teams just coming on so strong off the gate, I think it's putting a little bit more pressure on them earlier than they anticipated. What do you think, Phil, about what's happening in Boston?
Tupac said it best, looking like Larry Holmes, all flabby and sick. I tell you what, man, the Celts remind me of my bad boy Pistons in the early 90s when they start to lose the guys that made them the bad boys, that gave them the edge, that made opponents fear them, when they lost Mahorn, when Lambeer was only playing 50 games a year, when Isaiah had the Achilles. But they just weren't as dangerous. And at this point, cats are just laughing at Garnett's routine. And it's painful. It's painful for me to say that because I am a KG fan.
I know
and there's
that.
Only three or four guys in the league that I am truly, truly a fan of, and he is one. And without Allen and Pierce is starting to look his age, they just don't scare people. But in some ways, I think Doc may be okay with that. And don't think Doc didn't have planned what he said, very strategically.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you say all the time, D, they don't care about how they playing, man. If it's a 12-13 season, the 08-09 season, that first year is kind of irrelevant. They just want to be, like, they just don't want to dig themselves in too deep of a hole.
Mm-hmm.
So, for them, I think it's all about playing their best basketball in February, March, keeping guys healthy and keeping guys motivated. And that might be more towards the young guys right now because they do have a lot of young pieces, you know. So I'm not overly concerned with them. I don't think they're soft, but they don't have that bite like they used to have.
And I agree with that. And I think depending on how some of these, some of these young guys come along, Melo and some of these guys who could have an edge, Sullinger, you know, some of these young guys who might be able to bring energy, you know, we'll see how they get them in the mix and help them have that kind of physical side to them. I'd be interested as we have this conversation, you know, in, you know, February or March, getting to see a sense of how they're playing. The team I've been watching, I said Lala said, I need my ring. I'm tired of going to these cookouts in the summer with D Wade and LeBron and seeing that trophy sitting in the kitchen, and they shine on him. And our boy Carmelo has just been clowning early in the season, but you know, Amari going to be coming back. He's coming in the mix. What's going to be the effect, Phil? I'll hit you with this on Amari. I mean, what do you think is going to happen with the Knicks? It seems like they got some continuity going. They're doing some good things. You know, what do you see with Amari coming back into the mix?
You got to come back to me. I'm looking to see if Amari is still available in our fantasy basketball league. So thanks for that, Rebecca. You think I'm kidding?
Oh, my, you got me messing around. I'm trying to go here and see what's going on. You know, yeah, I'm trying to get in there and see what's going on. Hank, I'm gonna let him go do his thing. Hank, what do you think about Amari coming back in the mix?
It's funny. I think he's going to struggle early. I just think he's going to struggle early. I still believe there's going to be some chemistry problems with him and Anthony. But I do believe that they'll get it together. The Knicks look good this year. They look real good this year, in fact. And I think he can only help. I think you're looking at, you know, in a couple of months, this team taking off. I can't see them doing what they did last year. I think there is a desire there to get that ring. You know, they've gotten off to such a strong start. You know, outside of Miami, they're the toast of the East. So I look at Amari really helping that team down the stretch.
And I think Felton is going to play an important role in terms of the distribution. I mean, where are they going to need Amari to play better as a defensive end? You know, it feels like they have a better focus defensively on there. And it feels like Carmelo's making it. Effort, but when they're both on the court, you know, do they have that same level of intensity? And I think that's something that, you know, I'm really interested to see how they play in the defensive end. You know, they can score, but it's about, you know, how you get those stops at the end of the games is really what's going to matter. One of the things I've been saying about, man, we've been arguing back and forth our number four point on L.A. and the Lakers. And, you know, Pau Gasol, they give him a couple days off now, and you got the GM coming out. You know, Pau needs to adjust, and if he can't, you know, try to open the door for the trade. I just can't understand it, because in what way has D'Antoni's style proven to win championships? And now you're going to get rid of Pau Gasol. Like, when did D'Antoni become Doc Rivers? Hank, help me out, man.
Look at what the Lakers did last year. They almost lost Kobe because some of the crazy moves that their front office made.
Yeah.
Okay? Just dumb moves. And now you're talking about getting rid of Pau Gasol. You know, and last time I checked, wasn't he with the team the last time the Lakers won a championship? You know, I mean, and you know, he's still a very productive player. You know, and what are you expecting to get for him? You know, and those are things that I would be concerned about. And if I'm Kobe, I'm like, you know, what's going on here? And like, you're absolutely right. What has D'Antoni done? What has he done? Now, didn't he have, last time he coached, he did have both Amari and he did have Nash, right? Didn't get a thing. So, I mean, help me understand how this is a good move anyway. I think that The marijuana law that was passed in California, I think that the front office of the Lakers, they got their feel already.
You say they've been investing.
They are a chief investor. I'm here to hurry up and tell you.
Phil, I know you've been in the middle of this, man. Justin and the game changer. I mean, when Marcus comes back, I'm, you know, he gonna kill this one. Talk to me, man.
Yeah, programming note. Justin Paz and Marcus Flowers will be here next week.
My goodness.
Yeah, so certainly tune in for next week. So, I mean, Hank brings up some good points. D'Antoni had Nash 5 years ago, a younger Nash, and he had a Amari, as Marcus would say, Amari that had two good knees. Because right now he got an old knee. he got a young knee. And so I think that the Lakers are really treading some very dangerous ground. And, you know, if the Game Changer was on, he would just interrupt us and tell us that he told us so. And he did. He did. When he was talking his Clipper stuff, I'm like, whatever. Whatever the Lakers' record is, it'll be better than the Clippers, and that's not looking too accurate right now. But I think the Lakers are really in dangerous territory because, okay, if you move Gasol, now you're letting go one of the premier big guys in the league. And what if D12 does not re-sign? Now what you have is a team like you had with Kobe Bryant before you had a developing Bynum, and you got Gasol in the move.
Mm-hmm.
If you get rid of Gasol, you're getting rid of what makes you all different, what makes you all special. You have two quality bigs, and most teams don't have one. So I hope they don't go down this road. If they do move Gasol, you're not going to get market value. You're not going to get what you would have had if you would have moved him this time last year, partly because of performance. He's getting older. And, I mean, his numbers are just really not where they are. So if you consider what the Lakers got for him or what they got Gasol for, it's nowhere near what they're going to get back in return. So I really hope they figure out a way to keep Gasol, because here's the thing. There's no guarantee D12 is going to stay. I mean, there's
no.
Like, there's no guarantee. The GM's already said it doesn't make sense for him to even think about re-signing until the offseason. So, I tell you what, man, Kobe's not going to go to a sinking. Like, he's not going to stick with a sinking ship. Kobe's going to be off on the first boat, like on the Titanic, to find a way to get that sixth ring, even if it's not in L.A. So, they need to figure out something quick to keep Kobe happy and keep Gasol in town.
Yeah, I mean, what you're hearing is, you know, Ryan Anderson. And yeah, he's your stretch four, but I mean, again, what you said, you know, Gasol's what makes them different on both ends of the court. You know, I heard Bagnani, David Lee. So there's a couple of things out there, but you're right, you're not getting anything for. And part of my challenge with D'Antoni is that he doesn't adjust to his talent. And at some point, every great coach, Phil Jackson, all these, they adjust to what they got on the floor.
Tell me one thing, though. If the Suns had Kobe Bryant during their run, their 7 seconds or less run, you know, 05, 06, 07, when they were, you know, really one of the top teams in the West, if they had Kobe Bryant, if they had everything they had plus Kobe Bryant, they win at least one championship, if not two, right?
Well, they win it because if you watch them, the problem was they couldn't get the stop. You know, no matter where you are to win a championship, you're going to have to get a stop. And they could never get that stop. A young Kobe can make up for the fact that you might have not have a good defensive mindset. He would just figure out how to get the stop. So, yeah, I mean, they probably could have won it just because it wouldn't have been because of coaching. It would have been because he would have made some kind of play with 2 or 3 minutes left, that might have sealed the deal. But it wasn't designed from the bench. It wasn't part of, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think he probably could have done it. But it's because, you know, he's smart enough to make up for whatever it is. I think that's the issue. But a Kobe right now can't make up for that. And D12 can kind of make up for it, but that's their problem. And so I don't know where they're going to go with this. We had a lot of preseason, and Hank, you were part of the preseason stuff, but you can always jump in on this. But it'll be between we made some predictions, and obviously, you know, this is one that if Game Changer were here, he'd probably be bragging about what's happening with the Lakers. But one of the things that I did as a number five and five on the black hand side is I talked about Golden State being one of those teams. In the NBA preview show that I thought would make a run. And right now they're sitting second behind the Clippers in the Pacific Division at 10-7. And, you know, Coach Jackson out there is doing an incredible job with those guys, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, they start. One of the things that great teams do is they try to play tough at home. And so they've been 6-3 at home, and they're 4, and you try to go 50% on the road. They're 4-4 on the road. So they're getting some signature wins. They won. They're 7-3 in their last 10. So, you know, he's doing all the kinds of things that you need to do to build a successful team. And so that's one I can brag about. Phil T.
Yeah, I'm out of bullets on this one.
You were throwing a whole bunch of stuff out there. I don't know if there's much you can brag about.
No, there isn't. I thought Bradley Beal was going to have a really good year, perhaps a rookie of the year. He lasted about a week on my fantasy team. So one mediocre pick I made was I thought that Glenn Davis would have near all-star type of numbers, and he's putting up 16-9 right now. So, again, a very mediocre type of prediction, which is my best. So we'll just keep it moving, D.
All right. Well, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back as we close the show.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions. Follow us at Real Sports Guys, friend us at Real Sports Guys Radio, and keep up at realsportsguys.com. RSG.
All right, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're here with Hank and Phil, and, you know, we had a full show so far, but as we get down the stretch here, we mentioned a little bit earlier about what Brett Bielema said about Russell Wilson, and some news hit the air today. Some of you have been longtime listeners know that Coach Bielema has been on our show and a supporter. We were actually planning on getting him back on the air here as they prepared for the Rose Bowl, but news came out today that he will be making his way to Hogland. Big move there. Hank, you know, you're a Big Ten guy. What did you think when you heard the news?
I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. I didn't expect that at all when I heard about it today. You know, Bielema has been very, very successful, you know, at Wisconsin since taking over for Barry Alvarez. So, you know, you didn't think that he would just bail on him. You know, they the first team since the University of Michigan to go to the Rose Bowl 3 years in a row. And, you know, I didn't see it happening. On the other hand, I'm not surprised. You know, that's a very good situation there in Arkansas, SEC school. You know, he's got the whole state to recruit. You know, let's face it, the Big Ten is getting larger. It's going to be tougher for them to recruit up here. And I think he's trying to chase a championship. So, you know, good luck to him.
All right. Phil, you know, you had a chance to interact with Coach, and what were your thoughts when you heard the news?
I too was surprised. I thought that Bielema was going to be the Tom Izzo, the Coach K of college football. You know, the guy we look back and say, "Wow, here's a guy in the modern age that stayed with one program for 20 years," and you know, he built a brand with, you know, top 30, top 40 recruiting classes, okay? Top 20, top 30, top 40 recruiting classes, but yet if you take a look in the NFL over the last 5 years, no program has put more players into the NFL. So if I'm in the SEC, I'm a little nervous because now he's going to have top-tier talent.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, can he get guys to buy into his program and buy into his system and style of play? And I think he can. And so there was really not a program that, if I'm Alabama or LSU, there was really no program that was going to have me really nervous. Even Georgia, or the success that Arkansas had with Petrino. And so now, and yeah, it might take a few years for him to build up, but, you know, I mean, you look at the Big Ten, man. Ohio State went undefeated. And like Hank said, the Big Ten is getting more and more diverse, and it's kind of cluttering up the recruiting scene. Even Northern Illinois, I mean, they're in the backyard of Wisconsin. So I kind of see it as a strategic move. I was surprised. I think Bielema is an excellent coach, man, and he produces excellent assistants. I think that's a sign of a great coach, a great leader, is if you can develop other coaches. And so it's just a matter of time, man, before Arkansas really starts to unthrone Alabama, and Saban is looking at the NFL again.
Well, and I think, as many folks know, my connection with the university, and so there was a lot of chatter regarding this decision, both positive and negative. But, you know, the time I spent around Coach Bielema, this is a person that can go into a lot of different communities and speak with ease. And he had a pretty good stronghold and connection in Florida, and getting kids up to Wisconsin, and had developed some relationships I think are going to be fertile. And I think one of the things you just talked about, you know, the strength of a coach is their coaching tree. And you think about what's happening with Coach Dorn. You know, he went down to NIU in two seasons, went 17-1. Now he's at NC State. Paul Chris almost went into the Fighting Irish and pulled one out there. And so, you know, he was fortunate enough to really be able to build a staff, and I think he's going to have some good luck down there. So hopefully we can get Coach on here with us to talk about his new opportunity down in Arkansas. We're going to try and really work to try to get him on and to talk about that as well. But you know what time it is right now? It's time for that.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right, the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Phil T., who's your dog of the week?
I'm going with Alfred Morris, man. Over 120 yards rushing.
Okay.
For the Washington Redskins. If you look at the last 10 years, probably with the exception of maybe 1 year, he would be the rookie of the year, you know, except for this year with what you see with the three quarterbacks playing so well. Six-round pick, man. I don't know how Shanahan finds these guys. T.D., Terrell Davis, he was also a six-round pick. So Alfred Davis is playing ball, and I think because of what he's doing, he's opening up a lot of things for RG3 in the running in the passing game as well. So that's my dog of the week, Alfred Morris, running back.
All right, Alfred Morris.
We need more dogs.
All right, Hank, your dog of the week.
My dog of the week, since we were talking about college football, I'm going back to college football. My dog of the week is the SEC championship game. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see this game,
yeah,
or how it ended and everything,
yeah,
which was a lot of drama and a lot of theater. But I'm talking about two college teams that was just knocking the crap out of each other. That was the best NFL game I had seen all season. I'm going to tell you right now.
I just caught that.
I'll tell you guys, that game, I was tired watching that game. Those guys was hitting each other. That was some good slobber-knocking football. So, for that, SEC championship game is my dog of the week.
Hank, and I will say, you know, I've been, you know, hitting the SEC at a lot of different levels, but I watched that championship game, and I just said, that's some good football. That's some good, good football.
We need more dogs.
That's right. My dog of the week, in the spirit of our guest, Teron Biggs, is Austin Trout. you got to understand that this guy went to Mexico and beat Saul Canelo, Alvarez's brother, on his home community. At the end, having people cheer his name. And you know how tough it is to go against a Mexican fighter, but to do it in his own backyard. Then you go and you fight Miguel Cotto, who is like the adopted son in New York City when he fights, breaks records, and you get a decision. And not only do you get a decision, but you have judges who are, it's pretty decisive decision. Yeah. This is somebody that he's from Las Cruces, New Mexico, you know, real tough community, has just taken a tough road and have a lot of appreciation from him. We don't have a chance to highlight boxing a lot, but he's definitely, you know, I don't think people realize how tough that victory was for him, and I think we need to keep our eye on him. Phil, we got some stuff coming up here in the upcoming weeks, some things coming on, some things to think about. What do you have on the upcoming week?
Yeah, so next week, as I mentioned, Justin Page, our basketball guy, will be coming on, talking to us. Actually, no, he'll be a guest host for the whole show.
Yeah.
As well as Marcus the Game Changer will be returning. And whenever you get those two together, watch out. Watch out now. Eric Hamilton, the guru from KZoo for fantasy football, for the Fantasy Football Cipher. He will be back for week 15, talking a little bit about fantasy football players. And, you know, in one of our leagues, I had a great season, 9-13, make the playoffs, and who do I get in the first round? The guru. So a little nervous about the matchup, trying to figure out how I can do a Hail Mary, but we'll figure it out. So that's what we got going on. We have some other great guests lined up as well that we will unveil here towards the end of the year, some coaches and whatnot. But it's a good time to be a Real Sports Guys, and I want to take time to thank Hank Davis for doing a bang-up job for us tonight.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you so much for asking me on.
You know, Hank, you know we got to have you back soon, so it is. We love having you on the show, man. We definitely appreciate it. We're gonna have a couple of new announcements coming up here. A couple of wrinkles to the RSG community. So y'all got to stay tuned. You can always get us on iTunes. You can catch us on Facebook, where you catch us on Real Sports Guys Radio, on Twitter, at Real Sports Guys, and then realsportsguys.com. You know, we love the support. Stay with us. Until next week, RSG.